let's check out that Soul Train line now. The Soul Train gang to the music of Earth, Wind, and Fire and Mighty, Mighty.
Soul Train. Lord have mercy for those of us of a certain age. Love, Peace, and Soul is the name of the book. And, of course, Erica Blount, Dan Watts back in the studio. We have to have her back more than once since we have to cut this one short because of Eddie Conway's release. But we're glad we could get this in here.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, and Eddie Conway is more than enough reason to have this truncated. So I'm happy to be here.
And she worked really hard to bring some really fabulous people onto this program with us today. Demeter Jo Freeman, one of the most popular dancers on Soul Train. She's danced with James Brown, Joe Tex, choreographed Mick Jagger and Cher, is a trained dancer and an amazing artistic figure to this day, is with us. Demeter Jo, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. This is such a great honor to be on your show.
I appreciate you being here. And Tamichi, Tony Briggs is with us. He's a clothing designer who created the Hammer Pants and helped create MC Hammer's image and created outfits for the dancers and artists on Soul Train. Also danced on the show, designed for James Brown, Big Daddy Kane, and others. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Good morning. It's glad to be here, definitely.
And we also have, I think, Jerome Simmons, photographer for the local version of the show, is with us. Jerome, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Well, this is great to have you all here. And let me start this way. And then actually what I'm going to ask my good friend Erica to do is to help co-host this thing and throw out your own questions, since this is your body and soul, girl. You want to put this book together, right?
I did.
But one of the things that we talked about when you were last on the air was the powerful cultural effect.
Yeah.
That this program had on American consciousness, kind of the changing of the guard, so to speak, despite Dick Clark's efforts to take over.
Yeah.
This was a time when Roots came out, too.
Yeah.
When the movie Sounder came out, whole stuff was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about, I'd like all three to talk about it. Maybe we'll start with Demeter. Let her jump in here. How you look at that in terms of the power the show had in transforming our culture.
I think that the show's power really comes of a young kid, because in that time, not too many people can recognize that the black young kids had talent also. Even though we're doing street dancing, we have become making it very entertaining. We've become the Harlem Globetrotters, in a way. What Harlem Globetrotters has done to basketball, they have lured young kids in. They have shown that they are the top basketball players, but they also are amusing. That's what we are. We are entertaining. And this is a great opportunity in the 70s when young people barely had a dream of being a part of show business, because there was a certain type of dancing. There was ballet. There was modern. There was African. But it wasn't street dance. And everybody, especially the young people, who were white, and also the producers, they sat back and said, oh, she's just doing street dance. But it became more and more popular. And it gave the young kids an idea that they were able to go to these classes. So therefore, we learned in a club. We took club dancing and meeting each other and sharing. Well, our fighting at that time was really a duel of dancing. It wasn't, oh, I'm going to knife him, or I'm going to cut him up, or I'm going to shoot him, or, you know, and drugs weren't really here. The highness was to be the best in what we can do of entertaining. And that's what Don Caneas gave to us by putting a whole black show. Of course, we have the Clark at that time, but it was a few black people that were able to be on the show. And plus, being on that show, I was even part of the bandstand. We wore the skirts. We wore the ties and everything, because we were confined. But on Soul Train, we can wear
Yeah, Demita, talk to about how, you know, how you guys were received around the world.
Yeah, well, around the world, it's phenomenal for us. Most of us is not here because, because there was no money involved. No, never think of any money involved at all. We had the opportunity. And because there were so many that loved show business that wanted to go on, I don't think we came at a time where I guess the producers, the white people, didn't know how to pay us or, hey, give her a hamburger because we were 17 years old. So therefore, we didn't sign a lot of contracts because they were looking for actors and we had agents at that time, but we didn't have black people, these young kids, we didn't have any agents because we didn't think anybody would loan. But now to watch in Japan, kids are dressing like us, and we don't know that these Newberries, we just wore clothes, just look okay to be on the show. But we did not know it turned into a style, just like the hat or the lockers. The hats really came from, we used to go to see Barnum and Bailey. Remember the clowns used to wear the giant apple caps? Well, we put that together. The suspenders was to hold up the clothes, the pants, so the guys won't lose them when they fall down the floor.
and let me bring Tamichi in here. I mean, and part of it, I mean, this is a big part of your world, is designing these clothes that took America by hold.
Yes. See, the clothes today are very popular, but we use those clothes unnecessarily.
Tamichi?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I actually, yeah, for me it was very inspirational because I got a lot of my drive from the Soul Train dancers, and it was just my way of giving back. And I remember seeing Demita and Pat and Fawn and all those guys dancing and just being so amazingly beautiful and talented, and it just drove me to just really wanted to shower the Soul Train dancers with my creativity. So when I got the opportunity, I eventually segue from dancing on the show, which was a passion of mine, to just designing for them 24/7. And I wanted to make sure that they were original, that they looked fabulous, they were colorful, and that I was able to paint the show with the colors and vibrant of fabrics, just like the dancers were.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I think too the time period that the show came out of, you know, we're talking to Eddie Conway today and you know, after the assassination of JFK and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, you know, there was this whole different consciousness. There was, you know, a feeling of, you know, Black Panther Party and self-empowerment and I think, you know, that in addition to the self-empowerment, you know, this sort of joy and pride that the dancers and, you know, designers and the people that, you know, Don hired to be on the show, from, you know, some of the black DJs to, you know, the announcers, to, you know, people who had worked in the industry or who had not been able to get an opportunity. So that that whole sentiment, you know, was reflected in the dancers, it was reflected in the artists, it was reflected in the lyrics of the time. And I think, you know, that explosion, you know, in terms of fashion, in terms of dance styles and street styles, you know, for the general public, they were being validated. And for the first time, people all over the world were getting to see what was going on in these pockets in communities previously. Now it has this national stage, and with that national stage, it got validation.
And Soul Train also introduced us behind the scene. I mean, it was all black. My God.
Yeah.
This channel in here in L.A., we had Channel 11. It was phenomenal to me because I definitely, all my life, I wanted to dance. I love dancing, but I was ballerina when I was from 8 to 17. And then, of course, I did at home in the closet. You know, I was Diane Ross. I was doing all kinds. But now I have this opportunity, being this shy person, that bam, I went to a club, and the club was just like Saturday night. You know, you see the kids, you see this music is playing by the DJ. I mean, it was amazing. I had three girlfriends with me, Joy, Jackie, and Linda, who are my best friend, and we just graduated. And their gift to me was to go out and go to the club. And so, therefore, I went to a club that was very popular out here where all the Soul Train dancers came from, was Maverick's Flat. And to see Campbell, the guys, when they came in, honey, instead of the girls going toward them, they backed away. And me, I'm up there, walk toward them. Hey, let's go forward. But I came in the second day, and I just started looking at them, and I started, okay, I'll kick my legs. He likes to split, or I'll kick over him. You know, so by kicking and locking in, and doing all the different dances, it was amazing. I mean, I thought I was in heaven, you know, and going on Soul Train. And I really didn't know Don Kinnear's. There was a Don Kinnear's and a Tom Kuehn. And they looked like Shaft and Superfly coming through the door. and Campbell Locke said, oh, my gosh, there's Don Kinnear's. And I went, which one? because they both came in. But Pam Brown was the coordinator at the time. But when we went on, it was amazing. But it was really at a time where, okay, dancing was cool, calm, because Don has that kind of voice. So everybody personified his in dancing. So we were smooth and cool. But me and Campbell, we were kicking down on the floor and all over the place.
So
everybody kept saying, step back.
The insider look here. But we have Reverend Jerome here. Let's bring Jerome inside the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Jerome, I wanted to, you know, get a first-person perspective on the modest, you know, beginnings of Soul Train. So tell us a little bit about what that, you know, first set looked like and what your experience was working with Don, you know, early in Chicago.
Okay, in the 70s.
Jerome Simmons.
Yeah.
Jerome Simmons from Chicago. Yeah.
Well, see, in my world, there was a Tom Kuehn and there was a Don Kinnear's.
Demita, Jerome Simmons. We're talking to Jerome.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's all right, baby.
Hey, I'm so sorry.
Okay, let's go back to where the original Soul Train came from. We have a transit system in here in Chicago. It's called the L, which stands for elevated. And from the south side, if you went where Don Kinnear's studio was on the 26th floor of the Board of Trade building, you could see this train coming downtown. It would go through the buildings and stuff like that, as the cartoon Soul Train did. And that's where it got its name, because all the kids would ride that L downtown to get to the studios, which was about as big as average living room. And it maybe we had maybe 10 couples would fill the studio, 10 to 20 couples. If we had 20, that was a crowd. not 20 people, I should say, not 40, as couples would indicate. And Don started out as a radio disc jockey. He wanted to be a radio disc jockey. And he was working at WTON, where they had a multitude of baritone voices such as his. And he ended up being a news reporter. He even interviewed Dr. Martin Luther King when he lived there. And our first, George Johnson with Johnson Products, he took an interest in Soul Train and put up the money for the first pilot, which was performed by the Dells, and I think the Chalets performed on the first pilot, which got into Hollywood. But the Soul Train show in Chicago was quite different from the Soul Train show in L.A. Yeah. Because we had a style of dancing called bopping, which is where you held hands and you did turns. Something like the show that's on Channel 7, you know, the dance, big dance show.
Yes,
So when we got to California, we were importing some kids in to teach the LA kids how to bop, which was a big mistake.
Why was it a mistake?
Because they had their own style.
Uh-huh.
And bopping is it's a Chicago thing. You know, they call it stepping now.
Yeah.
It's the same as bopping. It's called stepping, which is a craze. But anyway, we took them out there, and the first show, we were dancing during the bop. It was the most boring thing you ever want to see. It was slow. You know, there was no excitement. The people just turning and letting each other smiling, and no steps, no. So we were at a Whiskey or Go-Go or something, and these kids were in there, and they were jumping all over the place, 10 feet in the air. And Don said, "That's what we need. We need that." And that's how basically the thing that saved Soul Train were the Soul Train dancers, because without their style of dancing, we would have had a quick death.
A quick death. And as Nick Puzo, let me bring you in here before we run out, and because you obviously were the number one fan.
Yeah, hello, guys.
Yeah,
I have the chief historian of Soul Train, and I run SoulTrainFans.com, which is represented by over, we'd say, about 5,000 members of folks that are into the show, former staff, dancers, and all of that. And I must say that, you know, just sitting here right now and listening to everyone, you know, I think it's amazing that, you know, this history is finally being told, not only by folks that really admire the show, but also folks that actually lived on the show, that lived
right
through the show and all of that. At this point, it's very important. I think it's very important what Erica did, and you know, especially with Demita Joe and Tamichi. Hi, Tamichi.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
Everybody that basically lived through the show that are still alive to tell about it, because now there's a bunch of folks that are no longer here with us that may not even ever get a chance to tell their side of the story. So I think it's really great, and I think that Erica's book is extremely awesome, and giving an insight of what Soul Train is and will for always be.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Thank you, Nick.
It's true. I think that the important one of the things that I was thinking about listening to you all, and Erica, jump in, please. I want to hear what you think about this, that is, when this erupted in the early 70s, everybody was so young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it was, and it was the power, I think, of that that Don Cornelius allowed to unleash, right?
Absolutely, yes, which is unusual. I mean, it was a youth culture movement, you know, in terms of, you know, it wasn't just black culture. You know, there was the counterculture movement that was going on at the same time.
I remember that.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I can tell. And he captured that spirit. He captured that energy, and he put it on television, which is unusual. You know, I mean, Rolling Stone was doing the same thing with, you know, capturing what was going on in the counterculture movement. But in terms of the black community, you know, we had Right On, you know, there was Tiger Beat, there were other outlets that were capturing this spirit. But, you know, Don was able to do that. And then later on, even when hip hop, you know, another youth movement came, you know, he was obviously reluctant to embrace it, but he understood enough. He understood that this was another youth movement that needed to be captured, that needed to be, you know, embraced and you know, and analyzed, you know, for a wider audience. So he was good in terms of
You said wider, not whiter.
I said wider. Which translates, yes, to whiter. But
just checking. I wasn't sure what you said.
Yes, I have a cold. But yes, that is wider. But it means the same thing. But yeah, so, I mean, you know, he was wise in terms of business. He was also wise in terms of capturing that spirit and understanding that people were interested in seeing it, you know, so.
So, Demita and Demetria, how long were you two on the show?
Now, I came on the show in 1971. I probably left around 1973, 74, because I had an opportunity to be in Tuchins of Verona. So that's when I went into that other. But it was great meeting the artists that you really love, the Supremes, the Spinners, the Motown. Yeah, Motown brought all these different people. The Jackson. I mean, you can actually sit and have lunch with Michael Jackson.
Tell us the James Brown stories.
James Brown. Yeah. The bodyguards, there wasn't any bodyguards. It was mostly their agent or their uncle or whatever. But other than that, I mean, the idea to Patti LaBelle, I mean, I refer to some of the clubs that we used to do. Mm. I mean, the idea of sitting there and just talking to them, and that was a big plus. There wasn't, no, you guys can't talk to the stars, you know. Yes, we can.
Yeah.
We had lunch with them. We went out with them. We were on a level where we learned about them.
Yeah. And you guys taught them dances as well.
I know. Even when Jermaine got married, I remember going to the bathroom and Hazel said, oh, Demita. And I said, yeah. You know, I want you to come to my wedding. And I looked around in the bathroom. Are you talking to me?
I mean, that's so different from today where, you know, the artists are very difficult to get.
They're afraid now.
Yeah.
And the hip hop, well, definitely, when I worked with the Dick Clark side of it, they were scared of them. They were kind of scared of the hip hop. And so I came into the picture. Oh, your people, you can talk to them. Yeah, right.
Well, that was a difference in that era. And I guess, Timothy, you were there from when to when?
I actually came in on the show in 78, and I started designing from 79 until the show ended, actually. And like I said, that my inspiration drove from the dances that I saw before, and that's what really inspired me to really to do fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to work with Demita, and I would work together on some musicals later. And it was just so amazing because, you know, we were instantly brother and sister because of that Soul Train connection and the four generations of brothers and sisters that have come together from the show. When we do get together, it's nothing but love. It's like we all are family.
That's right.
Was an amazing thing that really happened.
Connection we all have. No matter how old we get, we still are brother and sister.
Yeah, so over the time I was able to create, we kind of estimated this basically over almost 20,000 outfits for the show. I mean, the dancers were basically moving in. They would come, and when it was Soul Train time, you could tell because they were at my house for the weekend. And they would get dressed and run, and then when I got busy and started touring with some of the entertainers that had taken me away from the show, I was still designing for the dancers. I literally made them a priority. I was telling a friend the other day, I remember they were looking for a designer to make some outfits for this one singer who was coming out, and they saw some of my lace outfits on Soul Train, and they wanted me to design some stuff for her, but I wouldn't do it that day because I had to do the Soul Train dances, and come to find out the singer was Madonna.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
That's insane. and we only have a few minutes left here, so let me let you kind of help us wrap up here.
Well,
And maybe get back to Jerome if we have a chance, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Jerome, I did want to talk to you, too, about just what was Don like in those early days? You know, how would you characterize him as a person, particularly?
It was a Chicago. He loved to dance and loved to go out to the clubs and everything. But I think you should mention all the collaborations that Don did that made other people famous and other institutions, such as Solar Records, which was Soul Train Records before.
Yep.
It became Solar, and the many television programs that he instituted, the Lady Soul and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But Don could be aloof. You know, he could go into a shell, then next thing you know, he pops out. Hey, I want to play now. And then he turns around, he goes back into the shell, then he comes back out, I want to play again. But he was a generous person. He never forgot his friends from Chicago.
mm-hmm. when they came out there and whatnot. They took them in. And, of course, you got talked about. You know, he had his off-center jokes, which were not funny. His jokes are real funny to him. And everybody had to have a nickname.
See, Eric, close it out. Help us close out here.
Okay. Well, thank you all for coming. As you can see, you know, from the wide variety of people that we have, you know, Soul Train's impact was fashion, you know, and dance and music and television and just, you know, the reason for its long reason that it's the longest running first run syndicated show is because of all of these elements that right. they, you know, compile together. And, you know, there's another Soul Train being, you know, in production that, you know, it couldn't work, but there's that iconic brand, the wow. Soul Train, that we watched from the 70s, you know, on to 2006.
It will never be the same.
Yeah.
We finally had an outlet where young black people can go and turn on a tube and see themselves.
Yeah.
On a tube. I mean, I love Cecily Tyson. I love Nick Poitier. But this time, it was our turn.
Yeah. I mean, and it had some of those actors and actresses on the show, too. It wasn't just the, you know, the artists.
No, we got a chance, the artists and the dancers, we got a chance to mingle. And this was the only vehicle that we can find at that time.
We have to wrap up here. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
But I want to say we might have to do Soul Train 3. We'll have to come back and do 3 since we didn't have time.
So Saturday at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum, I'm going to do a book talk and have some video footage from the best years of Soul Train. That's at 2 p.m. this Saturday at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum in downtown Baltimore.
So be there.
Be there or be square.
As they say. Eric Blount Denoir, the book, of course, Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scenes of America's Favorite Dance Show, Soul Train, Classic Moments. Demeter Jo Freeman, one of the most popular dancers on the show, and dance everybody, and is an incredible artist in her own right beyond Soul Train. Dimitri Tony Briggs, famous for creating those hammer pants and everything else, 20,000 costumes. Jerome Simmons, photographer for the local version of the show, and Nick Puzo, who created the Soul Train fans group, and has seen every episode of the 1,100 episodes of Soul Train. Thank you all so much. We'll do this again. It's time for Soul Train 3.
Yes, it is. Right. Soul Train continues.
Soul Train continues. Thank you so much. And it's good to have all these folks here today, and it's been a really powerful day here on The Steiner Show. I'm glad you all could join us. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineers are Andrea Melton. Our interns are Alex Boston and Matt Malice. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cut. Go to steinershow.org to connect to all the things we've talked about on the air today. You can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner.